Recording in progress.
I would like us to start our meeting immediately. Let's welcome everybody in the meeting. The honorable members, the department, and all other stakeholders who are with us always, including the Fourth Estate. You're welcome to the meeting. I hope, Sia, you have sorted out from the department that they are ready to make the presentation. But I just want to check if the DM, Kolomisa, is here to introduce and lead their presentation. Is the Deputy Minister locked in?
We don't see him from the list, Chair. We don't see him from the list, but they can indicate because they might be using another name, but not on the list, Chair. But they can indicate.
Do we have the acting national commissioner? Is the acting national commissioner in the meeting, or who is leading the department?
Honorable members of the committee, I am Makgotla Samuel Thubagale, the acting national commissioner. I'm in the meeting. I am the one who is leading the team from the department. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Okay, thank you. We can see you there wherever you are. We're hoping that COVID will soon give us back our space to have you in front of us when we have these kind of discussions, because it's going to be important. If the DM is not here, I'm going to ask you, acting commissioner, because I think, Sia, you can help me there. I think we do courage with all our members. You can just confirm that.
Yes, Chair, we do.
Okay. Thank you very much. Acting Commissioner, can you lead us on this matter of education in correctional services facilities?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I want to then request that I start first by introducing the team that I am with today. We have Dr. Minette Platis, who is the Deputy Commissioner responsible for personal development in the Incarceration and Corrections Branch. We have Dr. Zolta Musoma, who is the Director of Correctional Programs.
We don't see who, at least somebody must just raise their hand so that we can connect.
Mr. Zikalala, I will just make sure that the screen is able to zoom into the colleagues as I introduce them.
You can start again. Thank you.
I have already introduced Dr. Minette Platis, who's the Deputy Commissioner Personal Development.
Good morning, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you, National Home Commissioner.
Next to her is Ms. Marion Johnson, who is the Director of Skills Development.
Good morning, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and National Commissioner and members of the committee.
And then next to Ms. Johnson is Mr. Medim Khwabani, who is the Acting Director of Formal Education.
Good morning, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and the Acting National Commissioner. We are happy to be here. Thank you.
And then we have Dr. Rodham Thoma, who is the Director of Correctional Programs.
Good morning, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee and the members. Thank you, Commissioner.
Yes, the others are the secretariat that is supporting us. We also, of course, technically always have Mr. Sihlenzi Kalala, who's the Deputy Commissioner responsible for intergovernmental relations. So that is the team that is with us today, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. I'm then going to request through your permission, Honorable Chairperson, that Dr. Plachy lead in the presentation on the subject state of education in correctional facilities as directed by the committee.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you once more. The presentation is flat. Can I proceed? I'm going to briefly deal. Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to briefly deal with the legal framework, our mandate, and then formal education or educational services falls within the Chief Directorate Offender Development Programs and Services. I will also talk about the participation in development programs. And part of this Chief Directorate is the sports, recreation, arts and culture section, including libraries. We will just briefly look at the impact of COVID-19 and then priorities. Our next slide is to provide the update. In terms of our legal framework, you can move to the next slide. In terms of the legal framework, it is indicated there that we have aligned our activities, our policies to the Constitution based on the Correctional Services Act. And then the other acts that are relevant obviously have to do with the child justice.
Hello?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Well, I think we've lost them. Sia, can you just check with them? We've lost the link. I thought I was the only one.
Yes, sir, we're on it.
Okay.
Chairperson, we are back. I'm finishing on the legal framework. I wonder if the chairperson is able to hear me.
I can hear you now. Can we get the slide back? You were on the slide that is saying you're going to update us about the topic of today. That's when we lost you.
Okay, because I then moved also to the legal framework. Let's just see if we can get that connection back, Chairperson. Apologies.
Yeah, are you able to present the slide from your side? We can hear their voices, but you can't see the slide.
Yes, Chair, that's what I'm trying to quickly do.
Okay.
To project from this side until Mr. Zigarella gets his connection.
Yes, thank you. If we can go then back to slide 3, the purpose, and then slide 4 is the legal framework.
All right.
Is it fine, Chairperson? Right. The legal framework slide four. We base what we do in correctional services on the Constitution of the Republic. Then we also have the Correctional Services Act. And then we are guided by the Child Justice Act, Children's Act, and then a number of acts relating to the Departments of Education, meaning Department of Basic Education and Higher Education. It also includes the Skills Development Act. And what is left out there is the Schools Act that was supposed to be before the white paper. And then the white paper guides us on rehabilitation and reintegration of offenders. If we can then go to the next slide. That is our legislative mandate as the department. The first two deal with enforcing sentences and detaining. And then the third one is most relevant for personal development of offenders, that we want to promote social responsibility and also the human development of the offenders while they are in our care. Next slide, please. The next slide, if we can move, it deals with rehabilitation. Just summarizing what it is that we aim to do in correctional services. And then that includes, in addition to personal development of the offenders, it also includes psychosocial services and even the health care. Now, part of personal development, we have included also our workplaces where we have offender labor in production workshops and agriculture. And I will later link those workshops and agriculture to education and training. The next slide then takes us to the NDP, National Development Plan, and also those priorities that we as a department are responsible for and report on, amongst others, education, skills and health is priority three. The NDP in chapter 12 talks about building safer communities. We believe if we rehabilitate offenders, we contribute to that. Then social cohesion and safe communities that we want to achieve through involving offenders in sport, recreation, arts and culture. And we really want to increase the access of offenders to our needs-based rehabilitation programs. And the indicator that we are reporting on in terms of our strategic plan is the percentage increase of offenders enrolled in development programs. We can move to the next slide.
We can't hear you. You cut off again.
I'm not sure. I think it's their network, Chair. But I think in the meantime, they can try and use another laptop to connect so that they have more than one laptop in the room instead of just having one. And when it connects, they can quickly jump to the next and come back to this one. I hope they can hear us now. Because they're using one laptop to connect.
Okay, that's good advice. Just get them to do that.
We are back online, Chairperson. In this slide, slide eight, we're just summarizing all of the programs and services within education. The chair and the panel might be aware that we have thousands of illiterate offenders. we want to give them a better education or better opportunity. But we start them then on adult education and training, even the pre-level, but we offer level 1 to 4. We offer all of those services and programs for literacy and getting them to grade 9, which is in the old term standard 7, A at level 4. The importance of that is that that is the minimum requirement for them to be enrolled into accredited skills training programs. We also offer grades 10 to 12, and then higher education certificates, diplomas, and degrees are also available. We also have TVET colleges in terms of our education and training offering, the different courses under the TVET colleges. We offer long and short skills training. With long, we mean any course longer than a month, and those are accredited with a different CETAS. And then I refer to national diplomas and artisans that should then be involved in theory and practice for them to have the qualification. If we can then move to formal education, I mentioned in this chief directorate, we have formal education, skills development, production workshops, agriculture, and then also ESREC, which means sports, recreation, arts, and culture. In formal education, we have general education and training. We refer to that as the GET band, starting from getting them literate and A at level 1 to 4, higher education, meaning we're working with that department, and then also computer-based training, because that is obviously the future. Then in the next slide, we are referring to the 17 schools that we have in DCS, including the 2 schools at the private prison. We follow completely the curriculum of the Department of Basic Education. And then offender learners also write what learners would write in the community to exit the National Senior Certificate Examination, which gives them entrance to university, bachelor's degrees, diplomas, and higher certificates. They also write the senior certificates, that's now adult offenders, those that haven't completed matric before. We are working with the Department of Basic Education to afford a second chance to offenders that never completed, or to learners that never completed matric. So there is that opportunity as well. If we can move to the next slide. Because we're talking about the state of education, we wanted to give a holistic view of what is happening in education in the last few years. We indicated the numbers there, starting from 2016, 17, 18, 19, 2020. As the chairperson and the committee will see, there has been a drastic decrease in the numbers of offenders participating in education programs, and it was even more evident in the 2020 academic year, and we talk about that reason a little bit later. The next slide then, it also deals with it continues with formal education. And we also indicate the numbers of offenders in the general education and training per academic year. But in this case now, we also went as far as the third quarter of 2021. Third quarter meaning the academic quarter and not the financial year quarter. Just to indicate the numbers that we have there, and the comparison between 2020, 2021, and the previous years. If we can then move to the next slide. We refer that to the decrease. Initially, we had an increase, and then 2020, the country was hit by COVID-19. That is not the only reason for the decline. but we say it can be possibly attributed to COVID-19, amongst others, anxiety amongst the learners as well as our educators. We also, in level 5, did not allow service providers into our facilities. From level 4, we eased that. Now, what that meant was that we had a phased approach in terms of learners in classes. Not all of the external educators came in at the same time. We reduced the numbers in our classes. What we found in DCS, but also in education.
You can continue if there's no echo. Please go ahead. We're waiting for you. Oh, sorry.
It seems that I was muted. Apologies, Chairperson. In terms of the phased approach, it meant that some learners for some days did not attend, and it was not unique to DCS. That is the system that we followed on the guidance of Department of Education. But what research showed us that was done by an organization in South Africa is that when learners miss out on some school days, one of the unintended consequences is that they become discouraged because they just simply forget what happened in class. And especially with our learners, they are older, it's more difficult for them to learn. So we found that because of resulting from the phased approach, learners not coming to school, number of educators being reduced, that eventually they started dropping out. So that's why we're saying the number of learners attending in the third quarter seems to have been a bit more than from 2020, but we are still monitoring the situation. So the whole of the 2020 academic year affected us, as well as this part of the 2021 academic year. Formal education, we're still talking about the different bands. We have jumped now. We can go to the next slide. Yes. As we are all aware, the academic year only started in February, guided by the management of COVID-19 in the country. So already we started with a shorter year, but we followed a program to catch up. But we saw an increase in the numbers of learners attending AS since the first quarter and the second quarter. But we have now noted a decrease in the third quarter that we are still monitoring. If we can then move to the next slide. There we look at FET, Further Education and Training, also from 2017 to 2021, just to give an overview of the state of education over a number of years. And then there we noted an increase in the number of offenders attending that program. We can then move also to, I think we are done with that one, if we can move to the next slide. That is just another depiction of the numbers that we're looking at, but this is now per quarter in the 2021 academic year. Starting in the first quarter, second quarter, there was an increase, and we see this decrease in the third academic quarter. Next slide, please. Now, grade 12, we have had a success story over a number of years. It has been widely reported that we have had an increase in the pass rate and that the offenders or the learners in DCS, about 60% of them got passes that allow them to pursue their bachelor's degrees at university level. The next slide, we indicate the schools, the next two slides in the six regions. I will not mention all of them. It is just a breakdown of the numbers that we have had in the different schools, and it continues on the next slide as well. We are saying in the 2020 academic year, that is where we had 100% pass in a number of those schools, and we mentioned them in Gauteng and then also in KZN, that had really good results over a number of years. If we can then move to the next slide. We're talking about curriculum intervention. That is what we normally do if we have poor performing schools, but in addition to the COVID-19 challenges, we are working with the National Department of Education to make sure that we also take part in the curriculum recovery plans. We have now moved faster into the fourth industrial revolution. We have provided our schools, almost all of them, with equipment for us to be able to do e-learning. So there's some funding resources that went into that. And the learning areas are indicated there. That includes the adult education and training examination. We have had training from the different education departments, training our officials to become invigilators during examination. And that also included business studies where we trained our principals and heads of centers on the requirements from the education department. We also had math literacy that we took our officials, our educators through in order for them to assist the offenders or the learners with catching up, but also in making better progress in those areas. In the next slide, we are referring to the participation of female offenders in formal education. Over the years, we had relatively low participation for a number of reasons, but one of the reasons is that we find that generally female offenders are a bit more literate than our male offenders. That's number one, but number two also, the percentage of female offenders is extremely low compared to the male offenders. But we indicate in 2020, we had 282 female offenders, third quarter 2021, 372, a clear increase there. The next slide is really just to indicate in the form of this graph, the number of improvement for participation of females across the different regions. In terms of skills development and participation of females, that is also indicated from the financial year 2019-20 up to the current financial year. Also a marked increase, 570 in the first year, 2020-21, 627. And then for this year, we project that eventually we will have 690 female offenders participating in skills development. Next slide deals with our delivery areas in skills development, just to give a brief overview of what we offer in our different facilities. That would then include engineering, business studies, skills training programs, there's basic occupational skills, some of them credit bearing and others not. And we make sure that when the offenders are skilled, they go out with a red seal certificate. They're also able to start their own business, we hope. And that's why we give them entrepreneurial skills as part of the course. Basic computer skills is also included. We can go to the next slide. There is really just an indication of progress made, just for us to see the numbers, the increase in the numbers in terms of skills development. Now, for us to do skills development and accredited training, We indicate there the workshops that we have and accreditation, as the portfolio committee will see. Accreditation expires, and it was deliberate for us to have included those dates.
No, you keep stopping.
It is the system that keeps stopping. We'll try to fix that, Chairperson. Let me try again in terms of the accreditation. Can you hear me now, Chairperson?
Yes, yes.
Right. As the committee will see, there are expiry dates, and our deliberate idea was to show that once we have accreditation, it doesn't mean it's a once-off process. It is valid for a certain period, and it then expires. It continues on the slide after that one, and I will then explain. The next one also indicates our training facilities in Free State, KwaZulu-Natal. And the expiry dates. Yes. As the panel can see, that one in Durban just expired now in May, and the one in Pietermaritzburg has been granted provisional accreditation by Masita. Now, there are a number of requirements for us to be accredited by the industry, and that is why we have in the next slide earmarked, go back to the next, yes, earmarked our facilities for accreditation, including some of those that have expired. The process that we have to ensure accreditation is obviously to have a suitable building for the different trades that we have in our facilities, but also to have officials that have been trained as artisans in the different fields. And then all of the safety requirements as indicated by industry and the different theaters. So even if Drakenstein, for instance, would be accredited, it will only last for a certain period, 2 or 3 years, and then we must make sure that all of those basic requirements are met. Then in terms of preliminary accreditation, it's maybe when we have one or two areas that we do not comply, and they give us specific time to make sure that we then comply to all of the requirements. If we can go to the next slide. That one deals with our performance over this financial year, as we have reported it now in our midterm, in terms of offenders attending law or occupational skills program. We indicate what was our target and our performance in quarter one and then also quarter two. We have achieved the target. The system tells me our internet connectivity is unstable. Chairperson will indicate if you lose me again. Then there's also short occupational skills, also first quarter of this financial year. And then the second quarter.
Yeah,
in terms of TVET college programs on the next slide, slide 30.
I'm continuing.
We also indicate in terms of quarter one and quarter two. Lost me now.
I think we have dealt with the end.
Is back.
I'm back online. I was at slide 30, I think, on the TVET college program, also indicating our target, and we have exceeded that. So I've said earlier, not all the dropouts or the decrease can be attributed to COVID-19, and here we prove that. despite those challenges, we have had a good performance in quarter one as well as quarter two. Then if we can go to the next slide, which deals with another directorate, it is sports, recreation, arts and culture. We are working with external service providers, our partners that we sign memoranda of understanding or agreement with, to assist us in providing sports, recreation, arts and culture to the offenders. We have officials in the education and training field that are working in this directorate together with some of our correctional officials. We are now in a process based on our self-sufficiency strategic direction. We are in a process to commercialize arts and crafts that have been produced by offenders. If I can just take the portfolio committee to our strategic framework on self-sufficiency, it's a document that has been formally approved in March of this year. But it's not that we only started 1st April with implementing self-sufficiency. It has always been there. It's just that we have formalized that. And then it was launched by the Honorable Minister in May 2021. So then, as part of our commercialization and becoming self-sufficient, we are going to launch our first arts and crafts production center in Klerksdorp Management Area. We are currently showing there 17 November, but it will now be on the 23rd of November. We also have a policy on the selling of arts and crafts, which is in the final draft form that will guide us as the department on how to deal with commercialization of arts and crafts. If we can then move to the next one that deals with libraries. It is really just to say we have libraries in our facilities that can be used by students doing formal education, but also for those that just want to do leisure reading. We have targets for that. And as a department, we annually take part in the Fundam Zanzi competition. In 2020, it did not happen. In 2021, it was a hybrid session, but all of the years before that, the previous 9 years, we used to have a big national function where our offenders used to do very well when they compete against community library clubs. We can move to the next one. As part of State of Education, we are indicating our performance in terms of all of these areas, sports, recreation, arts and culture. We indicated the previous financial year, just to give us a holistic overview. The next slide then deals with the current financial year until September 2021. Some of those we haven't achieved specifically in sports, because as the committee would appreciate, sports is not possible always to have social distancing. So with COVID-19, the different levels, we have completely stopped some of our activities. So sports was one thing. If we can then move to the next slide that deals with the impact of COVID-19. We are saying our schools and skills training sites were closed in certain parts of 2020 when we were specifically on level 5 and some even in level 4. We have been disrupted in 2021. Our schools were closed for some periods and then we came back in a phased approach. Usually in the winter vacation, we have a very serious effort to assist the grades 11 and 12 that was affected this year with COVID-19. And then in DCS as well as in the broader DBE, examinations were not written, but there were programs to assist learners to catch up. All senior certificate candidates will write with the rest of the country, the national senior certificate learners. Educators, we requested them to prepare for the increase in numbers now and at the same time still align themselves with our standing operating procedures in terms of curbing the spread of COVID-19 in our facilities. We continue to work with open distance learning universities and continue with online examinations. We have the facilities in some of our schools for offenders to continue with e-learning. Then there is another slide, still continuing with impact. Previously, UNISA students were assessed through certain examination procedures. There were answer sheets, and we had to move into the e-learning space. We introduced e-learning in some of the TVET centers. We are in the process to make sure that as far as possible, we provide computers, printers, whatever would be needed for us to access. Examinations are conducted under strict COVID-19 protocols. We are currently busy with examinations in both formal education and skills training, and we continue to monitor. There's guidance from the education departments also, especially earlier in the year where offenders tested positive. They were still allowed to sit. There were some strict guidelines from the education department. I mentioned the decline in sports participation. The next slide really just indicates, how we supervise the offenders while they are writing. If, like I'm saying, they test positive, then we do not deny them the opportunity to write. They can still write, but you can see the strict protocols that we adhere to in our schools. Just finally, to indicate achievements, we are proud that we are implementing the e-learning. We make use of the DHET support system for our TVET lecturers, our training higher education provider DCS access to examination mainframe. I'm losing internet connection again.
Maybe you need to wrap up.
My second from last slide, Chairperson. We work with external service providers, the CETAs. So in that case, the MERS CETA granted access to DCS accredited centers to register training interventions. Workplace approval was obtained from various CETAs in the process of accreditation. That is part of our achievements, and I think the last slide deals with our priorities and our status. I think the one before that one. Yes. We have a signed protocol with the Department of Higher Education. They have made funding available, still on slide 39. Funding has been made available for the training of a number of offenders over a 3-year period. Obviously, the training was disrupted, so it's taking us a little bit longer to reach all of those numbers. But there will be in total 1,112 offenders going through that program. We have MOUs. We have 46 DCS TVET examination centers registered. And then in terms of our priorities, it's really for us to focus on our policies. We have aligned our policies with e-learning based on the challenges of COVID-19, but also based on the developments in education generally. In terms of sports, recreation, arts and culture, we have updated that policy because the two departments, Department of Sports, combined with the Department of Arts and Culture, so that required us to also relook at our policies. So in terms of our priorities, in the last slide, it's really for us to get our updated policies approved as soon as possible, now that we have aligned them to e-learning and also the requirements of industry. I can stop there, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. The presentation, I must just make the point that it was not easy to follow and be with you all the time, given your poor connection. And I hope members would have tried their best. I think where they did not, I'm sure they will ask for those kind of explanations. Thank you very much for that. Members, there you have the presentation from the department. I'm going to invite you to interact with this work. I'm recognizing Honorable Kola Ngola, followed by Honorable Verna Horn, Velma Nivot, Namaseko Jere. Those are the hands I have for you. Hello, the platform is yours. Go ahead, Honorable Mwala. The platform is yours.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. I'm not sure if you can hear me that right.
Yes, I can hear you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Well, let us welcome this presentation from the department, which outlines actually the progressive initiatives that offenders are rehabilitated and brought back to communities to contribute, most particularly into the colony. The first issue, Chair, that I wish to raise is in terms of the presentation, I take it that the highest qualification the department offers is the degree, which is the MQF level 7. Nothing beyond that. In terms of the presentation, Chair, I'm not sure if that is correct or not. The second issue, Chair, I wish to raise is the committee to be able to assess particularly the work done as it relates to this great initiative and the progress made. I think when time allows, Chair, the department can just share with the subcommittee on correction the number of graduates produced in engineering since the resumption of this education program in DCL. The number of graduates on business studies and all the relevant given programs that they offer in this great initiative. Maybe before they can share with us, it will help us to see the actual impact this presentation is doing in our community. Even we should share about a decrease on enrollment. The department actually outlined what are the actual causes of decline. But I am presenting the kind of a decrease of creative depression as part. How best do we keep those those reasons for the decrease, so that we keep the decrease itself, so that we don't collapse this this great initiative. The last issue, Chair, is the they are saying on sports, recreation, arts and culture. They are partnering with external stakeholders. I want to check what is the role of the Department of Sports, Recreation and Arts and Culture in this program, GATICS. Because we can easily make a linkage between DCS and the National Department of Education as it relates to the qualifications, the curriculum, and other things. But when it relates to the sport, recreation, and arts and culture, we hear nothing of the contribution of the department towards this initiative. All we hear is that there is a partnership with external stakeholders. So should we take it that the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture has no contribution in this DCS program? Apologies for my voice. I'm a bit feverish since election. So it's not that really audible and loud as you may know. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Mola. We recognize that. I'm going to depart on how we normally do it because of the poor link from the department and ask Honorable Horn to come in and field his interactions with the department.
Yes, thank you, Chair, and good morning. Chair, two issues from my side. The first is in terms of formal educational programs. One of the issues with which we as members are sometimes confronted is complaints by inmates that they are precluded from enrolling in formal educational programs. And then upon further, I want to say investigation, or not really investigation, but let's say interrogation, the reason seemingly then would be that in the department's view, they are not there for a long enough term. So I would just want to hear from the department as to what the policy is, what is the type of sentence an inmate must be serving before they ultimately will be allowed to enroll, specifically if one looks at the short courses that is contained in the report as well, and what is then the distinction whether one specifically qualifies to enroll for a short course, even if you are... do not serve a sentence of a longer term. So that's the first issue, Chair. The second issue is around vocational training. So it's good to see there on that specific slide, and I didn't get the number of the slide, but the 10 sites at which the department are awaiting accreditation. However, what I want to ask is that we be afforded the information as to at which specific sites vocational training is afforded or undertaken, so that we and at which not. That's the first issue. The second issue, Chair, and that stems from, I must admit, the last time in the previous parliament, this portfolio committee had been afforded the opportunity to go on oversight when we were informed at specifically Khosu about the fact that due to a variety of reasons, but primarily the lack of artisans or a sufficient number of artisans in the employment of the department, that the vocational training sites, specifically around the manufacturing of furniture at Khosi Mampuru, at that stage ran at about 30% of capacity. So that, of course, if that's still the case and if that's the trend, would be problematic on two levels. Firstly, the department is therefore unable to tap in properly into the capacity or the potential of our vocational training sites. But secondly, of course, that will also defeat the whole purpose of self-sustaining affording the department the ability to be more self-sustaining by the fact that it's able to sell for example, the furniture that is made there. And at the time, the furniture was quite clearly of a very high level. So that's an anecdotal example, but I think what we should then, on the basis of that, ask Chair, is apart from where sites are for vocational training, also information as to at what capacity they are functioning, and if they're not functioning at full capacity, whether it is still the issue around a lack of artisans in the employment of correctional services that is hampering a full capacity on the part of these vocational training sites. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Hon, for those critical issues. Honorable Velma.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you and good day to everyone within the Department of Correctional Services. Thank you for the presentation. In addition to Honorable Hon's question, I would like to know overall, out of about, if I'm correct, the correctional centers is about 243 across the country. And out of the 243, how many has educational facilities? And then also a breakdown that Honorable Hon spoke about, which centers have the different forms of education that they offer. And then with regards to female inmates, I would like to see with regards to the 5 years, like the one that you gave in general, how many females received education across the 5 years from 2015 up until now? You said it's increased and decreased, but generally how many females got access to education and then which field? You say most of them is illiterate or literate, so which field, which streams of education did they obtain? And I also wanted to know the educators within the correctional centers, where are they paid from, which budget? Is it correctional services budget? Or is it from the Department of Basic Education or Higher Education, or from the CETAs? Where is the funding coming from for their position? And then occupational specification exemption. Sorry, just some clarity. Just need clarity on the last question. The OSD, the occupational specific dispensation. What is the update with regard to that for the educators within the correctional centers? And then I didn't get the full understanding, but the education for the inmates in correctional centers. Now, for both, is it for both remand detainees and, you know, the other inmates? Because some remand detainees wait for a very long time. Can they continue with education? I just wanted to get an understanding. Who's the education for? Is it for the sentenced inmates or also for remand detainees? I just wanted to get clarity on that. And then also, you know, some children struggle with education because of that struggle for various, because of various learning barriers, they drop out of school. Now, when they drop out of school, they get involved in crime. Now, many of these children has never been assessed for what were the learning barriers or what are the learning barriers, so they end up at a correctional center. When you place them, are they assessed on which stream of education they can go to? How is it done? Because they already struggled with education in schools, but they've never been assessed. So I'm just curious, those who are in the correctional centers, what happens there as well? And those are my questions. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Valma. Leavout, Honorable Jen.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, with due respect, your permission, can I just switch off my thing? I'm about to catch the bus and I'm using the phone and I'm not comfortable. Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, colleagues and the department. Chairperson, let me just give honor where it is due. The department did very well getting 81% for this year, for the past results. Chairperson, we just congratulate them for that. But also, Chairperson, going forward, I have a few questions. Number one, I was going to ask if it's compulsory for the inmates to get education and skills there, or they, do we have others who are sitting? But when the presenter was presenting, in fact, or when I was reading somewhere here, I got something like that, but they can also comment further with that one also, in terms of their intake. Because I'm also much also, Chairperson, interested on the issue of the recruitment. How do they recruit these teachers? I see that they are using also their inmates. I understand, are these inmates which are inside or those who have left? And also the educators, are these educators coming from outside? How do they recruit them if they are coming from outside? If they can at least give us information on that one. Also, Chairperson, I'm interested in knowing exactly how many of the foreigners among these students that are getting education in our inmates that are getting education, Chairperson. And then also, we with the issue of higher education, it seems as if they are saying the inmates are paying for themselves. So I just want to know, how do they control that in terms of them, like if they have to study with UNISA, they have to pay for themselves, something like that, if I got it correct. If they can give us more information on that one, how do they manage that if it's like that? And where do they get that money for them to be able to register outside with those institutions? And maybe they can also give us information of those institutions that they are working with. I know that UNISA will be one of them, but do we have other distance learning institutions except UNISA? Chairperson, also on the issue of the children, they are saying their children here, they go daily to school. So my question on this one, Chairperson, they are saying there are those who are not attending daily. For example, they mentioned the issue of the sentence. There is a category that is not allowed. Children are not allowed to attend daily because of the sentence that they are serving. So if they can also explain to us which category is that one. Lastly, Chairperson, how many of those schools that are currently registered, they are registered with for those full-time school children registered with the Department of Education? Is it private or is it Department of Education only? Lastly, Chairperson, on art and culture, I think on this one also,
It is very important. I think I would agree with my colleague that they want to find out from them if how far is the Department of Arts and Culture involved with this one. I know of some programs, very beautiful programs, where the department, when I was still working for the municipality, arts and culture, we used to have programs where we have choirs coming together from different prisons, coming in one venue, having a competition, winning the competition, and also boys, like men's choir, women's choir, individuals and all that. So if they can give us information, if do we still have those programs? Because I don't hear them, it's part of education. I don't hear them reporting about those programs. If there are still something, there's still something like that. Because it was happening somewhere in Bosbeck, the first time I saw it change. But I was also involved, even when they go to other areas. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Jelle. Honorable Glenys Breitenbach.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and good morning to everybody. I'm largely covered by the questions of my colleagues. Mr. Chair, I'd just like to know whether the department keeps any statistics or does any follow-ups of people who have made use of this education program and who leave prison with a qualification. Do they help them find jobs in their chosen field? Do they know if those people manage to find jobs? What I really want to know is the qualification put to productive use? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That's a beautiful background. Please don't drown there, but the background is beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
thank you, Acting National Commissioner and your team, and I hope that as all the members are raising issues, you have taken notes of everything that they needed clarity on that you need to respond to. I hand over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. And also for the questions that have been put through. I will respond to some and then the team will complete the picture. I will start with the question from Honorable Breitenbach in terms of us keeping statistics of those who make use of the qualifications they would have acquired whilst incarcerated. Our community corrections branch, as part of the programs on monitoring and providing support to parolees and probationers, helps us keep the statistics, and they also then, as part of support, provide information, networks, and also encourages the parolees and probationers to utilize the qualifications that they would have acquired. We also work with the local government in doing that, or other spheres of government. Just as an example, the art and craft facility that we will be launching next week, we are collaborating with the Matosana municipality, and one of the curators that are taking care of the museum in the municipality, where we also display art and crafts from our offenders and parolees, is actually a parolee. The other issue that one would then deal with is the interventions that we are putting in place to deal with the declining numbers. The self-sufficiency and sustainability framework provides us with a platform to reorientate our rehabilitation, education, and skill development programs towards a self-sufficiency and sustainability with regards to how we can generate revenue, but also
attract skills and qualifications in terms of our own employees, and also develop further the skills and qualifications for offenders. Out of the framework itself, the strategic framework, we've then been able to prioritize the employment of teachers, skills development practitioners. We've also been able to prioritize partnerships with departments that can provide us with extra capacity for us to be able to then build the capacity we need on the teaching and the skills facilitation side. And that will help us to then start to improve on the declining numbers. The other intervention that we are implementing is the conversion of our facilities using own resources, meaning that using our own offenders and our own officials that are artisans or that are trained technically, to increase the number of classrooms and facilities that we can then utilize for educational and skills development purposes. So we are converting unused buildings. We are also then building within our own territories, in our correctional facilities, extra classrooms for us to be able to increase the numbers. We are also watching closely the reasons, apart from the dynamic of COVID-19, the reasons for discontinuing with education or skills development courses, you know, by our offenders. Because once an offender stops, it is difficult to get them back. So we are utilizing our social workers to help in intervening with regards to that. And we find a number of reasons, including family support and encouragement. We also find also that our personal well-being programs from the faith-based organization help to provide that type of motivation for our offenders to get back into the programs. The issue of especially remand detainees, the take up on the side of remand detainees of short courses, and our ability to be our ability to offer those courses, as this was raised by Honorable Horn. We have just piloted on the side of correctional programs a project to start introducing correctional programs that will target remand detainees, because this is the population that is high in our center. And we intend then to build on that intake on correctional programs and see then how do we convert that into short skills development and short skills development and training programs that we can offer. So I'm going to then request through your permission, Honorable Chairperson, that the colleagues then provide more details, especially on the correctional programs pilot, because we are actually very keen on making an impact on remand detainees, because they actually are the ones that end up forming they end up transforming into the sentenced offender population that we that is in our care as correctional services. So I'm going to request Honorable Chairperson that the team then provide answers to other questions that were asked by honorable members. Through you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Acting National Commissioner and Chairperson. I am with Director of Skills Development, Ma'am Johnson. She will deal with some of the questions. Also Acting Director Formal Education, Mr. Hobani. And then we have Dr. Mosoma that deals with correctional programs. They will come in after me. Just to expand more on education for remand detainees, I think the committee will appreciate that even in the schools outside, if a learner has been out of school until July of a certain year, that learner cannot be enrolled, irrespective of any resources available. They cannot enroll in June, July. So sometimes we get our offenders later in the year. We then assess them and recruit them. Our educators go on a specific recruitment drive starting from November, even into December, early January, to recruit offenders to come into our schools. In terms of remand detainees, if they come into our facility around October and they have been registered, let's say for grade 12, we do make means as a department to ensure that they can write the examination. Also, even examinations for tertiary institutions, we have had in the past made arrangements with those institutions to allow them to complete the examination. That is now, in terms of remand detainees, it's almost like a crisis intervention assisting them. In terms of assessment, it is true that the member says that they dropped out because of learning difficulties. We found that in our research. Ideally, obviously, when a child drops out and is 11, that child should have been brought back to school. But now we find ourselves with adults that haven't completed a low grade in primary school. When they come to us in line with the DBE policies, we assess them. They sometimes tell us that they have completed grade 7 in school. When we assess them, it places them into grade 2 because of the years that they have lost and because of the changes in the curriculum in the Department of Basic Education. We can then not place that child or learner into what he would have wanted, grade 7. And we also are in contact with schools in the communities to get proof of them having completed the grade that they tell us they have. So there are difficulties to get them into school immediately, and some of them just refuse to go back to a very much lower grade. Also in terms of skills development, there's basic requirements for them to be registered into skills development. I referred in the presentation to adult education and training levels 1 to 4, that is the basic requirement for them to get enrolled into accredited skills training. So that becomes a difficulty to get them into that. In terms of payment for their studies, the department, like basic education in the community, we provide education until grade 12. After that, it is through the offenders and their families, those that want to complete with tertiary education, they do pay for themselves, but they are also allowed to apply, like the learners in the community, for assistance from different institutions. So that is also possible. But we provide a range of programs that Director Johnson will be talking about. There was questions, I think, from Honorable Horn in terms of complaints of offenders that they are not always included. And it's true, it might relate to the short-term offenders, because some courses are just by the nature of those accredited courses, 6 to 9 months, and some even longer. So that's true. For that reason, the short-term offenders will be excluded from long accredited courses. I spoke about the enrollment times for DBE, so they will be excluded because of that. But it doesn't mean that they will sit idle. There are so many other skills development programs, life skills under correctional programs that Dr. Masoma will talk about, that they can be involved in. So it's not only formal education and formal accredited skills that are available. But we do have long waiting lists, and I think we should be pleased to hear that. We do have long waiting lists for offenders that want to do engineering or welding. But because also of safety requirements, we can obviously only take limited numbers into our facilities. Even before COVID, we have certain requirements in terms of the floor space. So we wouldn't just fill those training facilities. with people who are eager to learn, and we must have the required number of security officials and skills development practitioners to provide those courses. We will give more detail in terms of the female offenders over a number of years. We do have those numbers readily available, so we will make that available. Then lastly, from my side, in terms of the financing of our educators, we recruit them from DCS. They are fully employed by the Department of Correctional Services. We advertise as such, but because of our working agreement with the Department of Basic Education, they also second teachers into our facilities. Those teachers are then paid by the Department of Basic Education, but those that have been recruited by Department of Correctional Services, we budget every year for compensation of our educators and also skills development practitioners. Commissioner, if you will allow me, I forgot about the Department of Sports, Arts and Culture, the very important role that that department plays. I do apologize for not going into that much of detail in terms of sports, recreation, arts and culture. Our focus was really on education, with specific focus on formal education and skills development. Because of the time frame, we didn't want to go more than 42 slides. But Department of Sports, Arts and Culture has been just a very wonderful, strong partner over the last at least 10 to 12 years. I mentioned the Fundamzansi that we host with them every year. Also in terms of the district development model, we are in the municipality in George, working with that community. And their branch, National Library of South Africa, they are actually very, very active in our facilities in terms of our libraries and this reading competition. So we also have, we had a signed MOA with them before they amalgamated the two departments. So as I indicated before, we have reworked that now to include the sports part into Department of Arts and Culture, and we will then have that signed by the two DGs. But really, my apologies, they are our star, one of our star government department partners. I will pause there, Commissioner and Chair.
Good morning once again, Chairperson and Commissioner, DGs, and members of the committee. My name is Marion Johnson, Director, Skills Development. With regard to how are our offenders assessed and is the provision of education and training, is it a compulsory element? Offenders register their needs, the education and training needs during the assessment process when they enter the correctional center. And then based on their assessment needs, they are placed or referred to either the psychologist or the educator or the trainer. When they meet the trainer or the educator, they are then assessed to determine their education and training level. If they do not meet the entry requirement for training, they are referred to education to ensure that they at least meet the minimum entry requirement and they are efficiently literate. And they have a numeracy proficiency up to the level of AYET level 4, that is NQF level 1, to be placed in skills programs. And then one of the committee members asked whether we have an assessment tool. Yes, we have a DCS assessment tool, as well as we use the assessment tools available from the Department of Higher Education to assess the AET learners. Then with regarding to the specific sites available for vocational training, those details will be made available as per the DC's response. Then about the lack of training at capacity at Hosimampuru, depending on when the honorable members visited Hosimampuru, if it was during the due to those restrictions and adherence to the COVID protocols, but at Hosimampuru, it's one of our centers where there is in-depth training of offenders assigned to the workshops. They have access to the engineering studies, which then give them also access to accredited training. Many of the offenders have access to artisanship training. We receive funding from the Department of NSF, and that training where many of the offenders were exposed to accredited training at that center. With regard to training presented as the industry requirements, there was a question with regarding to how is training presented and why are the numbers low. There is a specific ratio attached to training a welder. You cannot have more than 6 offenders or 6 trainees assigned to a welder. And then with regarding to training of a bricklayer, the ratio goes up a little bit higher. So we offer the training as per industry requirement, and we work very close with the relevant CETAs. Thank you, National Commissioner.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson and National Commissioner. I'm going to respond to a few questions, as my colleagues have already covered most of them. There was a question from the Honorable Mr. Nola, where he indicated that we only offer higher education up to level 4. I think we offer more than that, and then even higher than that, because there are offenders that have already completed their master's, their PhD. So what we can request is, if there is information to that regard, if that is requested, the Honorable can just indicate to us that we need information of offenders from this particular period to this period, so that we can provide that information. We'll gladly do so. And then the question by Mr. Horn, where he indicated that some inmates are precluded from enrolling for programs. In correctional services, we ensure that all the inmates that are showing an interest to participate in educational programs and the skill development programs are offered to that those programs based on the centers that we have and the capacity that we have. So we do make sure that all the offenders that have shown an interest, that are even willing to participate in our programs, offered that opportunity. No offender is turned back from any program that he wants to participate in. So that is why maybe we would have most of our schools, even right now, the number of our full-time schools are increasing progressively from where they were previously. And the other question was the one about remand detainees. That's one of the areas where maybe in the directorate, yes, in skill development, they are able to offer them, but with us, we only offer assistance in terms of ensuring that if there is an offender that has been arrested and he was in the middle of writing his examination, we ensure that we communicate with the various departments, which is the Department of Basic and Higher Education, to ensure that that particular learner is able to write. And we have done that excellently in relation to the various departments. But we are also, after such a question has been raised, we have also been looking at it and saying, how can we, as a directorate, ensure that these inmates, because we have seen that they form a large percentage these days. In the past, it was a few of them. Right now, we have seen that those unsentenced offenders, they form a large population of the inmates. So it means that there should be a way in which correctional services can be able to cater for them and make sure that their needs are also catered for in this regard. The number of the question that was asked by in terms of how many grade 12 we have, based on the number of full-time schools that we have across the country. We have those that are full-time, 211 currently that are writing with the Department of Basic Education, excluding those that are not registered full-time, but they are doing six and more subjects. So those are the learners that are currently writing with the Department of Basic Education in terms of educational programs, grade 12 and the senior certificates. So thank you very much, Chairperson and the colleagues. I'll give over to Dr. Musso.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, Acting National Commissioner. I'm going to respond on correctional programs. Well, as the Department of Correctional Services, as well articulated in our white paper on corrections of 2005, we have adopted needs-based interventions when it comes to rehabilitation. These are types of interventions that specifically balance the causal factors with the unique offense profile of the individual offender. And this means, therefore, that when the offender comes to our facilities, we assess them, looking at their risks, their needs. We then recommend specific programs. But these are mainly your sentence offenders who are serving sentences that are longer than 24 months, where we then develop a correctional sentence plan, which then details how the offender is going to participate in rehabilitation programs. But coming specifically to remand detainees and short-term offenders, we can actually indicate that these are the type of offenders that keep on coming back to our centers, mainly because we are not afforded enough time for them to be exposed to all our rehabilitation programs that are relevant in targeting their offending behavior. This is mainly because of the type of sentence that they serve, because they are usually given very short sentences. So this therefore means that we have limited time to expose them to rehabilitation programs. But we have made progress with regard to this, because when it comes to correctional programs, we have more than 14 correctional programs that are targeting the offending behavior. These are specifically your life skills programs. Then what we did during the financial year 2020 and 21, we have piloted a program specifically for remand detainees. We do know these are your, this is a population that is not yet sentenced, and therefore the correctional sentence plan that talks to the offense that they've committed would not be relevant. But what we do with this population, we offer a life skills program, which are generally looking at, for example, their substance abuse, trying to assist them to cope and also to deal with issues of using substances. And we're also looking at restoring relationships, because most of the time they are accused of crimes that they've committed within their own families and even within their communities. So what these programs then do, they assist them to have a deeper insight into those and ensure then that they correct that offending behavior. So thus far, we've piloted this program for remand detainees in the Western Cape and also in the LMN region. Though we continue with this, we are also intending also to include the short-term offenders. But of course, with limited capacity, we do this gradually. That is in a phased approach. Thank you very much, Chairperson. I will pause there.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. We are... in terms of the record, we try to provide.
That's fine. Thank you, Honourable Member.
Answers to all the questions, but just as the.
That's fine. Thank you, Acting Commissioner. Any quick follow-ups, members? If there's any member with a quick follow-up, I'll allow for that. Otherwise, We're closer to wrapping up. Honorable Velma Niewold and Verna. Velma Niewold Rachen and Velma.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't know if it was my network that I didn't get the response, but the statistics of all the inmates, the 243 centers, how many have educational facilities, and then what streams are provided. But I think that if they can send that information in writing, it will be fine. And then the number of female inmates over the five years. Who had education opportunities. I didn't get those statistics. Maybe it was my network. And then I also would like to ask with regard to the libraries, how many correctional centers does have libraries of their own? Because you talk about libraries, but I'm not clear which centers have libraries. And thank you also for the response with regard to those with barriers to learning. But if they're young and they haven't finished school, then they come to correctional services or a center. And then previously they had, where they could be given support. What kind of support is provided? I'm not sure in terms of adults. They're still young, but they can finish their schooling. What support does the department offer, if any? Those are my only follow-ups. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Werner Horn.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just in follow-up to the questions I asked about vocational training, I can confirm that, yes, it was in fact pre-COVID when we visited Khosi Mampuru, and therefore, Chair, through you, if the rest of the colleagues agree, I would ask that we be afforded in writing a full report as to at which centres there are vocational training sites or institutions, and at what capacity they are operating, and to what extent, if it's not on full capacity, it is hampered by the lack of artisans in the employment of correctional services. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Horn. Quick responses there, Acting National Commissioner.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Dr. Platis will just leave that one.
Thank you, National Commissioner. Just quick response, the one that we have also missed is about foreigners in our schools. We will also make that information available. One of the challenges with foreigners and their access, for instance, to skills development or grade 12 is the requirement to have an ID. So we sometimes have a challenge even with our South African offenders. If they do not have an ID, then it becomes difficult to give them access to skills development, certain accredited courses, and to write examination. But we are in partnership with the Department of Home Affairs to assist those offenders. In terms of the number of schools, we have 17 schools that are registered with the Department of Basic Education, meaning that we follow the curriculum in all of our 17 registered schools. We will give the information about females broken down into the last 5 years, their involvement of female offenders. In terms of libraries, we have formal libraries at each and every one of the formal schools. In all of the other centers, we have, in some of them, full libraries. In most of them, we have, let's say, reading rooms, where there is a facility for offenders to access books for leisure, but the formal libraries are at the formal schools, 17 of them. The support to the young offenders. Yes, the children specifically in our facilities, we would assess them academically, but we also have the services of social workers and psychologists. They assist us to deal with other problems that these youngsters might have had that caused them to drop out. So we are attempting a holistic approach, but even with the young people, we find that if they have left school 2 or 3 years ago, they are not very keen. But we keep on motivating and recruiting them to come back to school.
I think we will pause there just with a commitment that we will give those numbers that Honorable Juan requested in terms of vocational training at the different facilities and the capacity that we are able to accommodate in those facilities. Thank you, Chairperson. Commissioner.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Those were the quick responses.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me thank you, Acting Commissioner, and your team for the presentation and the responses, but also to urge you to working with our committee and secretariat to forward all of those outstanding issues that have been raised that you committed to provide in hoping that it will not take a month to do that. We would like to have those within 10 days. That's the standard we do even for ministers. When we ask questions, we write questions to them, we expect answers within 10 days. So you've got to keep to that standard as well. We're not going to go for 2 or 3 weeks. Because by the time you go there, would not be here. So I'd like to urge you to do that. And I think the committee will follow that with you. So thank you very much. We're going to be, in terms of our program, interacting with you on other matters. But just to, as I close, to members and our committee, for our, in the next 2 weeks, if you could arrange Sia and team as part of our diary, a processing committee meeting, which means it's going to be the members to process about 3 issues that I'm going to raise, some have been raised here. One, we're going to need that committee to just process all of our minutes. Two, to process the report that we must present to the main committee. 3, members have been raising issues of oversight. I'd like to use that meeting for us to deal with whatever ideas are proposed for oversight. And in that regard, I'm going to ask members to share whatever suggestions they have with the committee around the areas of oversight. Remember, the main committee is also, we have agreed last week, we're going to be doing that. So it's better that from the correctional services point of view, we just prepare and package our own issues. So you, amongst the programs that are there, there's got to be a separate session, which I call processing session by the members to just deal with all of those issues. I hope the committee had taken note of that. Otherwise, thank you very much for your attendance and for your contributions. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you.